If you enjoy this audio and you'd like to support the project, you can now do so and get 50% off an annual subscription to my Patreon, where you get a ton of bonus content plus early access to audio in your podcast feed. All you need to do is go to patreon.com/girlonthenet and use the code WANKER at checkout.
The Keys to the Kingdom, Part 2, by Osmer van Alsberg. Read by Pandora Blake. Reva stood up, a bit dazed. The room around her still seemed incomprehensible in its size and contents. She could not fathom what information might be held in all those books, or what business her new guardian had with them. Even stranger, the woman had seemed to expect her, and had been so prepared as to have a suit waiting, tailor-made for her. After all her preparations and attempts at secrecy, she had been found out, perhaps before she had even begun. She couldn't begin to understand what it all meant. "For God's sake, girl, pull your britches up. Show some self-respect." Reva looked down at her uncovered thighs and the mess of cloth bunched around her knees. She untangled herself without apology. She smoothed out the cloth that covered her hips. Before, the trousers had been clothing, plain and simple. Now the shape of them seemed a mould to hold together her tender flesh. Her hands sculpted her figure. She felt the shape of her body for the first time. "Hurry up, girl. We've got a lot of work to do if we're going to get you ready." Reva nodded and stood at attention as she had seen soldiers do. Her face was still wet with tears, but she let the traces be. She felt she could not move without command. She stood motionless as the madame began to list her responsibilities for the day. Most of her task involved sorting books, reorganizing the shelves so that new volumes could be added. The madame spoke fast, and the details passed over Reva before she could comprehend them. "Why don't you start with that, and we'll reconvene in an hour to see how you're doing. Any questions?" Reva stood with perfect posture. She was proud of the straightness of her spine and the relaxed poise of her shoulders. Some words of affirmation would have calmed her growing anxiety as she realised how little she had understood. The woman was still watching. As the silence lengthened, Reva contemplated the phrasing she would use. "My apologies, though I am certain your instructions were clear. In my overwrought state, I have neglected to comprehend them. Forgive me for the tax on your time, but I'm afraid I cannot proceed unless you explain to me my task once more." This seemed appropriately deferential, and the words seemed clear as she rehearsed them in her mind. But as she prepared to send them off into the world, her mouth would not cooperate. Her lips would not part. Her tongue laid limp, her throat refused to clear. The madame spoke again. "Don't be afraid to ask me anything. Even if you need me to repeat it all again, that's fine. I'm not an ogre." She winked, and Reva dropped her eyes. In time, the madame returned to her desk. No longer under scrutiny, Reva relaxed and scanned the room. Her immediate surroundings were largely empty. Her bed of leaves and soil was the most lush piece of furniture she could see, the other specimens forged of metal and hard wood. No matter, she would not be doing much sitting. Closer to the balcony's edge, she found a misshapen pyramid of mysterious tomes. The madame's discard pile, presumably. Finding this provided her some relief. The unskilled labour required for organising these books was exactly the sort she could perform. Whether or not this was the task that had been asked of her, she would be methodical and patient, and that surely would be appreciated. She picked up a volume and glanced back at her guardian for confirmation. She received none. The woman was absorbed in her work, uninterested in the girl she had moments ago thrashed and humiliated so personally. The madame's pen scratched in a fury as she turned pages one at a time in a steady rhythm. Riva found these mechanical motions hypnotic, but soon turned away, tired just from watching. She could never do what the woman was doing. Even the movement of her hands was too quick to follow. The idea that she was comprehending and processing the texts as she flipped through them seemed otherworldly. The book in Riva's hand was bound in leather and the title sewn into the binding. The script was in a language she did not know, but the letters were stitched with cunning precision. As she flipped through the pages, she saw letters that squiggled in looping waves. Had snakes a written language, this would surely be it. Another book, bound in thick paper, was written in cloven hoof prints. Another was made of jagged, toothy impressions. She sorted each by the animals they reminded her of. Snake, cow, shark. Bird, bear, fish. Tree, rock. Wind and sky and sun. The pile had been as tall as her waist when she began, and after a while she had created over a dozen smaller stacks. The birds seemed more literate than other species, and their pile soon reached her nose. Only a few of the volumes were in human languages, and only one in the language she understood. A Complete History of Avarynth, it read. It was the largest book in the pile, and she struggled to lift its weight. She scooted it to the floor, and leaning over it, opened the cover. "How are you progressing, my dear?" Riva closed the book and set a few others on top of it. She turned to face the woman and murmured, "Good, good." "Have you done as I asked?" The woman's voice sounded too pitying and too playful. She knew that Riva hadn't heard the instructions, and soon they would repeat the shameful scene of an hour ago. Riva tried to prepare herself. She was still sore. It didn't seem fair. "I think so. You just wanted me to sort them, right?" The woman did not speak. She came a few steps closer and lifted the books on top of A Complete History of Avarynth, dropping them back into the greater pile. Crouching, she held the book in both arms and lifted from her knees. The weight of it weakened her otherwise graceful stride into a waddle, but with purpose, she made her way to a nearby table and laid the book open. Riva watched as the woman flipped through the pages. The madame seemed to know exactly what she was looking for, and when she found it, she turned and waved the girl over. "Read that paragraph aloud," she said. That instruction seemed perfectly clear, and Riva hoped her elocution would be pleasing enough to mollify the woman. "Riva began to read," Riva read. Although she hadn't heard her mentor's instructions, nor had she followed them, the young Duchess had done exactly what her madame expected. Once she found the chronicle of every important event in the land that carried her family's name, her interest in the future finally began to surpass her reliance on the past. Riva looked up from the page to Madame Krolitz. The woman smiled, but offered no clarifications. With a swallow, Riva continued. The old woman had known her task to be unfair, and, fully aware of the young Duchess's limitations, she allowed her to disintegrate the cohesion of civilizations. "I don't understand what that means." "It is a little obtuse, isn't it?" the woman agreed. "And I rather object to being called old woman. Mentor is better. But keep reading." Riva continued. The young Duchess had no awareness as to the importance of the books she separated, nor their bearing on the greater ecosystems they represented. With the impetuousness that characterised so much of her youth, she sorted them without first seeking clarification. Though she had acted without malice, her reluctance to accept her own limitations would soon create environmental disasters she would spend her entire rule repairing. She stopped. She wasn't sure she believed the words in front of her. She flipped back a few pages to her journey in the mountains, and further to her instruction from Miss Farthington on proper poise and penmanship. That all seemed so frivolous now, although she had put so much effort into her studies at the time. As a teenager, she had assumed grace was all one needed to be royal. She cringed at her naivete. The text contained moments she had forgotten and consequences she hadn't even known. When 6-year-old Riva wandered alone into the forest chasing rabbits, her supervising attendant had been imprisoned for 5 years. No one had told 6-year-old Riva. She turned back a few more chapters to her mother's ascent to the throne and her grandmother's exile. "I think it's time for you to stop reading," said the madame. Riva closed the book. She wasn't ready for it. She was still too proud to read hurtful truths. "You should eat something," Madame Crowlett said. "You must be famished." What if she moved those stacks of books back into their untidy pile? Could whatever harm she had caused by ordering them be undone? She ran back to the stacks. They were standing where she had left them, and she pushed them over into each other. Each stack toppled. Each one stayed together. The books bonded together. A Complete History of Averinth was no longer the thickest book in the room. "I baked some bread this morning," the madame remarked. "I bake bread every morning. You should have some. I should have offered it to you earlier." The girl tried to lift the giant books off the floor. As she laid her fingers over them, she found they hadn't simply stuck together. They had formed into single, massive tomes, with only one outer cover on each one. Some of their spines were too wide to fit on a shelf. The largest book, The Birds, would require some kind of hoist or a team of soldiers even to lift. Looking again, a few of the stacks looked taller now than they had a few moments ago. They were growing. They were absorbing pages from the pile, she realised. She pushed them off flat on the floor. Whatever harm she had done would stay done, but she would not allow any more mischief. "What has happened?" she asked the woman. "What have I unknowingly done? What demons haunt these books that their rearrangement can bring forth calamity?" Madame Krolitz shook her head. "I'm insulted that you don't want any bread. Child, you're hardly the first chieftain to factionalise the populace. You've separated your nation into coalitions, and each group will band against the others. All things exist in a precarious balance, and you have simply found out more early than others how little is outside your control. Please, eat." The girl took the slice of bread before her and lifted it to her mouth. Yesterday the woman had been so harsh with her, but today, when according to law she had caused irreparable harm, Madame Crowlett seemed unconcerned. Riva took another piece of bread. It was delicious and comforting. She was sickened by herself. "Madame, do not think me ungrateful, and be assured that I do appreciate your mercy and your hospitality, but the uncertainty of my position leaves me ill at ease. Are you not to punish me for the mistakes I've made today?" "My dear," the woman said, "I do not think I can punish you more than you've already punished yourself." The woman sliced more bread for herself and closed her eyes, savouring a bite. Riva nodded, and then, after a pause, shook her head. "Forgive my impertinence, but I disagree," she said. She spoke without thinking, more confidently than she felt. "You told me that your study is based in knowledge and discipline, and today you have denied me both. I am aware that I am ignorant of much, although now acutely attuned that my actions have consequences that I cannot begin to predict. However, and this is what angers me, I cannot even comprehend those consequences now, their severity nor their scope. You and that prescient book tell me in vague, stilted terms, but I do not understand the disaster I have made. I ask you now, as forthrightly as I know how can I ever come to terms with the reality I have created when you refuse to impart to me the strength that comes from pain? Riva took a few breaths, exhausted from her speech, and absent-mindedly ate the rest of her bread. The woman took her by the wrist. Do you really want me to punish you proportionately to the damage you have caused? My desire has nothing to do with it. It is my responsibility. Then take off that page boy suit. Today, you become a queen. The woman turned away. Riva closed her eyes as she opened her shirt. She wasn't sure she was ready for what was to come, but she would do as she was told. Once she assumed the seat of power, she would no longer have the luxury of obedience. The hat and the vest and the little shoes seemed to come off on their own. The trousers were squeezed tightly around her waist, and she had to bounce side to side to slide out of them, which she did. She cast her clothes over the balcony and stood in her undergarments, newly aware of the draughty cavern air. Madame Krolitz returned with a cart full of tools, curated specifically for this moment, Riva realised. The punishment she was about to endure must have been foretold in the book. The idea that her beating already had historical significance scared her somewhat, but she trusted that the Madame wouldn't put her through the ordeal if it wasn't for the good of the land. With a few deep breaths, she gathered the will to say, I'm ready for my punishment. Not until you finish stripping down, silly girl. Yes, Madame. Riva bared herself before the woman and resisted the urge to cover herself. She had nothing to hide. Before we get started, I want you to tell me, in your own words, why you deserve so much of my attention today. Riva felt more exposed by the question than she did by her nudity. She wanted many things that a punishment wouldn't provide. The damage she had caused would not be repaired. She would not feel better about having done whatever she had done, nor would she understand the mechanics of her crime. She should be punished because girls who cause problems get punished. That wasn't the reason, though. She wasn't a girl anymore. You will punish me because I, Riva, Duchess of Avarinth, command it. Madame Krolitz seemed to approve of this, although she also seemed to find something in it amusing. She immediately obliged, however, leading the Duchess to a piece of furniture designed to hold a prisoner in place. Riva felt her body secured in its cold embrace, her arms fastened to its sides. Her buttocks stuck out into the room, alert and ready. The woman touched her with a single fingernail. Riva felt the whole of her consciousness rush from her head and down her back. She was her bottom now. Pay attention, my darling, for this is wisdom. She slapped the girl's cheeks in quick succession with her open hand. The little stings were true, and Riva understood what they meant in a grammar that surpassed her ability to translate. This poem was short, and as the next sonnet started, made of wood and leather and bites of cane, she dissolved into sensation. How the woman swung her tools with such force remained a mystery, but her lesson made sense. She had never learned with her whole body before, only in the shallows of her mind. Each swing of the cane seemed to rip her body apart, but it always came back together before the next stroke. Every time she dissolved, she lost her memories, her identity. And each time they reformed, it seemed that she reinvented them from scratch, reconstituting them into the same shapes as before. She was inevitable, no matter how many times she was broken apart. Far away, her face was crying, but that wasn't important now. A slab of wood sent ripples through her perimeter. She expanded to fill the room. And back again to her exposed bottom, now red with swellings of purple here and there and white stripes across it. All she was this round, battered thing, two throbbing globes that felt like they contained the world. "Thank you, madame," she said. "I think I have gained what I needed." The woman responded with a series of quick strokes, so hard and so fast that Reva could not prepare herself. She found herself transposed from everything to nothing, and as the last ripple pierced her, back into herself again. Her senses were elsewhere, and she could not see the room. She barely remembered where she was. As the straps were unbuckled and she regained her freedom, she stepped into the world anew. A dress was laid out before her, and it slipped over her shoulders. In it, she was regal, and as words floated past her, she caught a few. "You must journey home," they said, among other things. She took a step and felt a pang of her punishment again as her muscles flexed. Again, she stepped forward, feeling her death and rebirth, out of the mountain, back to the surface, out and in again once more. This was The Keys to the Kingdom Part 2. Written by Osmer van Alsberg and read by Pandora Blake. Copyright Dreams of Spanking 2020. Dreams of Spanking is a fair, independent producer. Please show your support by paying for the spanking scenes you watch and listen to.